Talk that matters. Johnny Vetmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Johnny Vetmore Show on today's News Talk, TNT. Did you know that we're here? Look, new day, and we're going to have a brilliant show today. Oh, my God, I got one of my favorite guys on the second hour, Ian Carroll. Not to say that Basil Valentine is one of my favorite people who's going to be joining us at 20 past the hour, but one of my favorite guys, Ian Carroll, who's of course an Epstein researcher. Load of you must know him, of course, because he is prolific in his research. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff. So let's start off with a monologue that I've taken out of the Epstein 101 series, which I think I'm going to make the show a little bit Epstein heavy this today. And so I hope you all enjoy it. Now, Jeffrey Epstein was a man of a thousand faces. He is best known today as a prolific paedophile child trafficker, not the best thing to be known as. But the public has been presented with this very simplistic depiction of his complex operation for a reason. Epstein wasn't only grooming girls, he was also grooming potential future leaders in business, politics, and intelligence, with targets such as Bill Clinton, Ehud Barak, RFK Jr., and Prince Andrew in his sights. It's clear that Jeffrey Epstein was playing the game of espionage and dynasty. Epstein was a significant piece on a three-dimensional chessboard. Regardless of his eventual comeuppance, he had become a grandmaster at all the various games in which he involved himself, and his actions were not limited to child trafficking. Epstein and Maxwell may have based themselves mostly in the United States of America, but the fact remains that they were both heavily linked to Israeli state intelligence, as well as their courting of the former president of America. Epstein and Maxwell also forged significant bonds with Ehud Barak, the 10th prime minister of Israel. Barak had previously forged a career as a lieutenant general in the Israeli Defense Force. From the early 1990s, Barak became the chief of general staff, serving until 1995, and later that same year, he became the Minister of Foreign Affairs. Barak was elected as Prime Minister of Israel on the 6th of July 1999, leaving the office on the 7th of March 2001. Also making himself director of defense during this period. When the attacks on September 11th, 2001 rocked the world, Barak was one of the first people to appear on television immediately after the attacks to name Osama bin Laden as a prime suspect, making Al-Qaeda leader public enemy number one. The former Israeli prime minister also appeared in Epstein's Little Black Book, alongside other political grandees such as Tony Blair, Donald Trump, and Bill Clinton. However, Epstein's relationship with Ehud Barak appears to be as close, if not closer, than any other relationship he had previously formed. There is one very wealthy and powerful female in particular who had joint business ties to both Jeffrey Epstein and Ehud Barak. This powerful German businesswoman was also recorded on the Lolita Express during the periods we have been examining in my Epstein 101 series. 3 weeks before Epstein and Clinton flew out to Africa, his private plane's flight log recorded the second flight of that year to include Nicole Yunkerman, who is now known as Countess Brachetti Peretti since marrying the Italian head of API Oil, Ferdinando Brachetti Peretti. During the mid-90s, Yunkerman was a supermodel represented by Elite Model Management, the same modeling agency in which Epstein and Maxwell's friend Naomi Campbell also worked for. But Yunkerman was also a very talented businesswoman who had a peculiar amount of access to the wealthy elites from a young age. It is unclear when the glamorous German model turned businesswoman originally connected with Epstein, but Yunkerman had attended Harvard during a period where Epstein was attempting to financially tie himself to the elite university. Yunkerman's association with Epstein didn't end after they flew out to Birmingham together on the 2nd of September 2002. By 2017, Nicole Yunkerman had become a big investor in futuristic technology, and she was invested along Jeffrey Epstein, Peter Thiel, and in Ehud Barak's dystopian Carbine 911 project. Carbine 911 described itself as next-generation call handling platform supported by a full ecosystem encompassing advanced IP-based communication features, global infrastructure, and caller solutions. And the company was aiming to become, and is aiming to become, the high-tech proxy call handling contractor for the emergency services in various countries. The Barak-led operation gives the employees at Carbine 911, mainly made up of former members of the IDF's 8,200 cyber intelligence unit, unfettered access to some of the most sensitive data available to US emergency services. And of course, Yunkerman is invested in a wide range of significant intelligence-linked enterprises now, including SpaceX, after selling Elon Musk her satellite array technology, and Grok, the AI engine, which has been incorporated into Musk's X platform. Now we'll hear more about Epstein in the second hour, of course, but for now, how do you fancy bank holiday weekend at a music festival for the Truth and Freedom Tribe? This is only 2 weeks away now. You better get going with 30 awake artists, including Danny Rambling and Mobius Loop, an all-night acoustic fire pit, Bouncy Castle and Hope Sussex for the children, plus loads of amazing stalls and scrumptious food vendors. This is an event not to be missed by anyone who's aware of the truth in the world. A Stand in the Park and the Light Paper present A Stand in the Light, a truth music festival in the beautiful Lake District on May 24th to the 27th. You get 4 days camping and full access to the whole festival for just £60 plus booking fee. Children under five come free. There's no better bargain anywhere. Visit their website now to make sure you don't miss out on what's going to be a brilliant weekend for the whole Freedom family. StandInTheLight.uk. And remember, at TNT, we never go home. We are committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live, 24/7, online globally. No matter what, we've got you covered on TNT.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I've been in the car all day and I got to listen.
Can't get enough of it.
You guys are doing a great job.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So, people, on Tuesday, the United States rolled out steep tariffs on a handful of Chinese-made products, quadrupling duties on electric vehicles, EVs, to over 100%, and imposing new levies on advanced batteries, solar cells, steel, aluminium, medical equipment, and more. Here with the story, joining me now is TNT news producer Adam Clark, aka Ruckus. Tell us more, Ruckus, about how the time when nobody's got any money in their pocket, the cyber and the economic war against China comes first.
Well, it's all about votes, don't you know? It is an election year. So this was apparently this was Mr. Biden himself, the United States president currently for at least a little while longer. He disclosed a high tariff increase on an array of Chinese imports, including the electric vehicles, which had saw the steepest. I mean, they four times as much as usual. That's pretty wild. They also are slapping tariffs on computer chips, medical products, a whole bunch of things. This risks an election year standoff with Beijing. And it is seen as a move aimed to impress voters who are not fans of Biden's economic policies. The tariffs will affect $18 billion worth of Chinese imported goods, including but not limited to, apparently, steel and aluminum semiconductors, batteries, critical minerals, solar cells, cranes. Yes, cranes, not the bird, but the equipment. Biden administration officials claim that the measures have come in response. Finally, this is in response to years of, quote, unfair trade practices, end quote, by China, including forced technology transfers, intellectual property violations, and cyber hacking of American businesses. So this has been going on for years. And Biden woke up today and said, you know what? I think it's time to do something about that. Buckaroo, like, what the heck? How silly. Anyways, White House National Economic Advisor Lael Brainard told reporters, quote, China is using the same playbook it has before to power its own growth at the expense of others by continuing to invest despite excess Chinese capacity and flooding global markets with exports that are underpriced due to unfair practices, end quote. Whatever do they mean? I'm not quite sure. Oh, wait, that's right. let's see here. The tariffs, now revised, are justified. This is according to U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai, who has accused China of stealing U.S. intellectual property and claimed that in some cases, Beijing has become, quote unquote, more aggressive with cyber intrusions targeting American technology. She said prior, quote unquote, Section 301 tariffs had been effective in reducing U.S. imports of Chinese goods while increasing imports from other countries. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, the country imported $427 billion in goods from China in the year 2023 and exported $148 billion. U.S. officials have repeatedly labeled China as America's top quote-unquote competitor. While tightening economic restrictions against the country, tariffs on Chinese goods were hiked significantly under former President Donald Trump, who launched the first volley in a tit-for-tat trade war that began in 2018. A similarly hostile approach has continued under his successor, Biden, who has adopted several policies aimed at the Chinese economy. You mean they act the same sometimes on certain issues? Weird. Beijing has warned that such measures violate the principles of fair competition and harm the stability of world trade. The International Monetary Fund, the IMF, who doesn't love them, warned last week that growing U.S.-China trade tensions are threatening the overall global economic growth. So, in other words, we got to figure this out, Johnny, or it could spell doom. Doom for the entire planet. What say you, my friend?
I tell you, little Carol says, yes, it's outrageous that America stole a spare ribs recipe from China. It's true. They've been selling spare ribs all over America, and the Chinese aren't very happy about it at all. Now, I tell you, come on. This is so obvious. This is part of the warfare that we will see. This is part of the warfare because most of war will be fueled by electronic products that we have no idea how they work. They're so futuristic in the way that they're built and they're made, and they contain all of these products. So all of these things, of course, bump up the tariffs. So is it so that they can increase how many are made in the US? Because I think what will happen is just, electric car prices in the US will skyrocket, and this new gen tech is supposedly to take away carbon emissions and stop global warming. Well, I think this doesn't look like it's trying to stop anything, and it's not going along the same playbook as they've been doing all along. Oh, yes, it is. Sorry. It's a war, isn't it? So anything that is going to be used potentially in a war against each other is going to get a price hike from one or the other. And it's amazing that, China... Yeah, I was talking about Epstein there in the monologue. We'll be talking about him later. But Epstein was doing deals with the Chinese. Hey, he was doing deals on behalf of the Clintons as well. When Epstein and Clinton flew across and did their Asian tour in 2002, they started off in Japan, leaving from a Japanese military base. They went on, I think they went on then to Singapore, and then they went to China, or it's the other way around. But they went into China. You don't know what they did there. There's no pictures of them sitting around a table like you find. I found them sitting with I think he's now the president or prime minister of Singapore, a guy called Thurman. I was the one who found a picture in the Singapore archives of Epstein and Clinton sitting around a table with these officials, and they were going from country to country selling off parts of American secrets as well. And this will come out eventually. A lot of American secrets were sold to different countries in the world, including China. Because at the same time, you know, Biden will slap on these tariffs, and who's over there selling out the US beforehand and US technology and actually leaking this technology? Probably Hunter Biden before now. So this is all just pure hypocrisy, of course. This is beautiful. I mean, it's not good for the electric car industry, but I think the new style of warfare, if you've seen the drones that Israel are releasing now, the ones that can search buildings without humans needing to be there and then exterminate people in those buildings without humans needing to be there. Well, you know, you don't want your enemy to have a foothold in that market. So there's a lot of this is not just an economic war. This is also about going into next gen warfare, what we're going to see in the future. And so we expect to see much more of this. And the same will happen with AI technologies as they're produced and rolled out. And that will be much harder to tag a price on, because of course, those are things that are in the cyber realm. Crazy business. Is there any sort of sign of what people like Elon Musk think about this, seeing as he's one of the biggest electric vehicle salesmen in the United States of America?
No, he's being mysteriously quiet, Johnny. I can't imagine why. Maybe he might actually benefit from higher priced vehicles coming from him here in the Americas. How ridiculous to try to force everybody into this idea. You got to switch it up. We're going to make it illegal to drive gas vehicles. And then now it's going to cost you extra because we don't give you a choice. You got to buy it from the bigs. Yeah, they're just going to price everybody out, force them into the 15-minute cities, Johnny. We know how they do.
Economic crisis is on its way, and it does not matter, does it, to them? They just don't care. Thank you for that, Ruckus. Join us in the second hour. I'm sure you will, and we'll cry about some more of this tomfoolery that's happening around the world that's causing our prices to go up, not their prices to go up. They don't care because they're, you know, all of these politicians are being paid $200,000 to $4 million by the Israel lobby to keep shtum about what's going on over in Palestine. So they don't care. It's not affecting them. It just affects us. So yeah, I look forward to speaking to you in the second hour.
All right, we'll see you then, my friend. Take care.
Awesome. You're watching Today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's Dirk Pohlman.
So this is essential. We have now the insurance company saying it's a state actor that did it. So it's an act of war. It's not an act of terrorism. So we don't pay. And now we'll see what is officially coming up. I can tell you that this, what we just talked about, was not mentioned in the German mainstream media. This is something that was completely cast aside. We didn't hear about it.
The insurance policy seems, as you said correctly, seems to cover terrorism but not war. So compensation for the plaintiff would only be possible if the attack were considered an act of terrorism but not an act of war. However, this is important, however, even if the insurance covers only terrorism, a distinction has to be made between when a state is involved and when there's no state involvement.
The Dirk Pohlman Show on Today's News Talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT radio listeners rely on TNT radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
One in four Australian women experience domestic violence in their lifetime. Staying is dangerous, but leaving can mean homelessness for them and their children. With your generosity, the Salvos can provide crisis services and ongoing support, helping women find a way out of violence and a way back into a safe and stable life. Help us leave no one in need. Please donate to the Red Shield Appeal today.
Right, I've got cancer. I've been trying to tell the rest of you, but no one's listening. And I don't just mean you, ears. Eyes, would you look in the damn toilet for once? Hands, roll those sleeves and take a sample. And legs, trot off to the doctor to get me looked at. Because bowel cancer can be successfully treated when detected early. Now look who's finally woken up.
Our next steps to space.
This time we go back to the moon to learn to live, to work, to invent, to create.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Johnny Redmore Show on today's News Talk TNT. Now, when I said this guy's name and I typed it in the chat just before the show started and said he's going to be joining me, everybody went, yeah, because he's loved around here. Yeah. He's part of the channel for sure. I am joined in this first hour by the one and only Basil Valentine, who many of you know very well, political editor and presenter on TNT. Basil Valentine is a philosopher, poet, broadcaster, producer, political pundit, writer, musician, horse racing aficionado. Oh, I didn't know that. I used to be one of those. And regular contributor to Sunday Wire with Patrick Henningsen. Basil, how the devil are you?
Very well, thank you, Johnny. It's great to be with you. And thank you for your kind words. And hello to our viewers and listeners all around the world.
Yeah, I know the chat loves you. Hey, Basil, we all love you, they say. That's as Penelope Pitstop's ghost said straight away. So tell me, my friend, is the world at a crossroads?
Well, you know, every generation seems to think that its epoch is the most important in history. Let's not forget the Anabaptists and millennials of the Middle Ages who thought the world was going to end. And then, of course, the greatest generation fighting the Second World War, culminating in the first and to date only, I'm pleased to say, use of nuclear weapons in a combat scenario. After the Second World War, we had 30, 40, 50 years of economic growth and peace and increased international cooperation, leading right up to the end of the 1990s or the turn of the century, really. And then with a bang, or rather two or three loud bangs, it all came crashing down on 9/11. And the 21st century has been a 2.5 decades now of seemingly endless war, conflict. And, you know, the insertion of artificial divisions between people. We've also seen the sort of subversion of culture, a lot of people would say, the inversion of everything it is to be human, even. So I do think we've gone off the rails a bit in the 21st century. Plus, of course, we've got the most dangerous international situation that we've had, well, since I've been alive. I just missed the Cuban Missile Crisis by a year or two. So this is undoubtedly the worst case of nuclear brinkmanship since then. The Daily Mail, for example, running a big story this morning, Europe must prepare for war, you know, says who? I mean, what an extraordinary thing to say. Europe gears up for war. More than 2 years into the Ukraine war, Vladimir Putin has doubled down. UK and European allies are steeling their economies and armed forces for war. We cannot go to war with Russia, Johnny. It's completely insane. You know, let's not forget that soon after the start of this conflict, there was a peace deal on the table in Istanbul, and Boris Johnson went there to torpedo it. This is such an unnecessary war. It's like a war almost between England and Ireland or England and Scotland, because Ukrainians and Russians have been part of the same constitutional and, you know, representative bloc for decades. People say that Russia itself originated in the Ukraine, you know, 500, 600, 700 years ago. They were part of the same country. Populations of Ukrainians live in Russia, just as populations of Russia live in the Ukraine. And that's what this fight was about. But a war has been engineered effectively, I think, in extremely bad faith, because some hotheads or I prefer to call them airheads in Washington and in the UK deep state, don't like the idea of Russia being a powerful independent country that they cannot control. And it seems they're prepared to take us to the edge of or even beyond nuclear war in order to prevent that from happening. I mean, we've even seen articles in supposedly intelligent publications over the last couple of years starting to talk about winnable nuclear wars. I mean, that really is the height of madness. So, plus on top of that, of course, you've got this, you know, absolutely horrendous situation in the Middle East, well, specifically in Gaza, with a mass slaughter going on. And apparently, if you don't like it, you're an anti-Semite. Totally bizarre inversion once again. So, you know, these are unique times. I hope we pull through them. But we do have to identify both the evil abroad in the world in all its manifestations and the sheer idiocy, and try and continue to advocate for wisdom, peace and prosperity, although there seems to be little appetite for any of those around amongst the politicians of Europe and North America, Johnny.
Yeah, your analysis there was honestly second to none. I agree with every single word you said there, including that. I mean, Ukraine and Russia, they're basically cousins. They're basically of the same family. And yeah, they've had, you know, every family has hiccups here and there, serious ones in their case in the past. But they, in the 90s, I mean, they saw each other as very close. And then that division that was created by non-governmental organizations and a lot of other intelligence meddling from the West caused that fracture. And it was a terrible fracture for the people who lived in that region, for sure. And you're completely right. Listen, we'll discuss some of this when we come back after the news. You're listening to today's News Talk on TNT.
News.
There is a difference.
What's on the schedule for today?
A little less yappity-yap and a little more
news.
Yay!
Now, TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The first U.S.-made F-16 fighter jets are set to arrive in Ukraine within the next month, as announced by Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen during a press conference in Stockholm with other Nordic leaders and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem claimed in her book, No Going Back, that she canceled the scheduled meeting with French President Emmanuel Macron due to his alleged anti-Israel comments. However, Macron's office has clarified that Governor Noem was never invited to meet with him.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show. I'm here with Basil Valentine. You just laid out a vision which I completely agree with. Some of what you were saying there, Basil, was fantastically accurate, not only about the Ukraine conflict, but about the times that we're living in. When you talk about people who are now discussing the idea of winnable nuclear war, this was the same rhetoric that was coming out in the late 50s. This is like we're repeating the cycles, very, very much we're repeating the cycles. Once Ukraine and Russia started, I just happened to be writing up the second of the Schwab articles, Dr. Klaus Schwab, or How the CFR Taught Me to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. And I was studying that period of history where they were going through nuclear weapons and foreign policy, writing up mutually assured destruction within on thermonuclear war, and was designing that nuclear future. A lot of people like John Foster Dulles were saying, oh, you know, we don't want to use the big nuclear weapons. We're happy to use the small nuclear weapons. And we've reached that period again. And people think what you said about people thinking that their generation is special and suddenly they all do the right thing. And everyone, we've learned from it. Look, we look back in history. We've learned from all of these terrible actors of the past. We're not going to make those same mistakes. While at the same time, all we see is inversion. all around us, inversion of sense. I tweeted out, posted a video of the Eurovision Song Contest, clips from the Eurovision Song Contest yesterday that Simon Goddick put out. Oh my Lord. I can't even see that. When I was a child, if that had been Eurovision, my mum wouldn't have made it part of every year that we all had to sit down and watch Eurovision, you know. She would have been disgusted by it. So the whole world is turned upside down. It seems like we don't learn lessons from the past. Do you think that's because they take some of that history out of the textbooks, do you think, Basil?
Well, we are in danger of rewriting history. That's certainly the case with AI and with judicious editing. As they say, history is written by the winners, isn't it? Tonight, I'm going to be guest hosting the Patrick Henningsen Show, and I'll be joined by Andrew Eborn, who's done a lot of research into how AI can affect elections. For example, you can create an image of a politician surrounded by smiling faces of a particular ethnicity or something to indicate that they're popular with that sort of person. And in fact, the whole thing's completely fake. You know, likewise, it's possible to doctor videos to make politicians look bad or worse or better, for that matter. Increasingly, people are finding it hard to know with an image on the internet whether it's real or whether it's faked, which is a truly bizarre world to be living in. And you're right, history itself is changing all the time. I mean, I don't think we should, you know, shy away from examining history and re-examining the conclusions that we drew from various events, shall we say. But the problem we've got at the moment is that we in the West don't have any real memory of what all-out war looks like. They have in Ukraine and Russia because they're fighting one, but the greatest generation who fought the Second World War are now almost to a man dead. So you get a lot of hot-headed, bellicose idiots. I could name a few who seem to think that war is somehow a solution to international problems. And they're very willing to send other people's children to go and fight in them and die and get mutilated. But you'd never get them putting the flak jacket on themselves and going out and fighting on the front line. Now, that's nothing new. Who can forget the joke from the First World War when the company commander said to the chaps going over the top in the trenches, "Remember, men, we're right behind you." To which one of the enlisted men shouted, "Yes, a very long way behind," because, of course, the officers didn't put themselves in harm's way beyond a certain rank. You know, lots of lieutenants and captains died in the First World War, but not too many colonels or generals. So, you know, in a sense, we've got that scenario playing out again. Believe it or not, war is horrific. It should be the very last resort, if indeed it is ever resorted to. And the fact that we've got 18 separate conflicts going on in Africa at the moment, and two absolutely horrendous mass casualty wars in the greater European theatre, is a damning indictment on the state of diplomacy and international relations. We've got a situation where diplomacy is now automatically regarded as appeasement. We've got in Israel a country determined to carry out an exterminationist policy towards its enemy. In other words, they want to eliminate every single member of Hamas. Well, we didn't do that even in the Second World War against the Germans. We didn't carry on fighting and killing German civilians until everybody that we thought might be a Nazi and his brother and his son had all been killed. But that's what the Israelis are doing. We've never really seen that in modern times, exterminationist wars. So, and then in the Ukraine, you've got a situation where, again, we should all be rushing around to bring the fighting to an end. But because of the double standards of people like David Cameron and Tony Blinken, they're quite happy to see Palestinian territory invaded in the Middle East. They don't care about borders there. But somehow these actually recent artificial borders in the Ukraine are absolutely sacrosanct, even though the majority Russian populations do not care for the border that has been imposed on them since the Soviet era. So, you know, we're in a bad place. We need to get back to diplomacy. It seems the Chinese and, you know, people like the Qataris are the only people interested in acting as genuine mediators. The Chinese, for all their economic aggrandizement, shall we say, over the last few years, and their economic ambitions nevertheless like to act on the international stage as peacemakers. They want a role in the Middle East to bring about peace, but you know, they're a long way from achieving it at the moment. But certainly Britain, absolutely in the toilet with David Cameron when it comes to international relations at the moment. His most recent speeches have been abysmal. Likewise, frankly, the United States, you know, we're not getting anywhere with the so-called adults in the room, because they're not. They're people that have been elevated way above their intellectual capabilities.
Indeed. And David Cameron, I mean, it's very interesting. Yeah, I see David Cameron as being placed to go back as leader. I don't think they got a leader for the Conservative parties. So he's being placed back in there. And there will be some sort of way to sneak him back in eventually when the Conservatives start to implode. But what you were saying about Turkey as well, Boris Johnson going on torpedoing any negotiation effort. Well, Turkey's such an important part to all of this. And of course, the lines are being drawn up. And if anybody wants to see what the battle line looks like and where the front lines will be, well, I don't think Turkey is going to end up being on the side of the West. And if you look all of the way down, you could probably go all the way down to the Yemen, all the way up to see one long front line eventually appearing. Basil, your analysis is always second to none. I really am impressed, and I can't wait to talk to you again. But our time is up. Thank you for coming on, my friend.
Thank you, Johnny. See you again soon.
Yeah, good luck hosting the Patrick Henningson show tonight.
I look forward to it. Well. 9 p.m. UK time, 10 p.m. Central European time, 4 p.m. Eastern.
Be there or be square, as they say. You're listening to today's News Talk on TNT.
Here's a bushfire fact. Bushfires can occur without warning. So if you're travelling during bushfire season, here are three simple steps to remember. 1. Check the fire danger rating before you go. The higher the fire danger rating, the more dangerous the conditions. It may be safer to replan your trip. 2. Think about the area you're going to and what you would do if a fire started. How would you escape the area if you needed to? And where would you go? Check if there's a neighbourhood safer place. 3. It's dangerous to drive through smoke or fire. If you can't find a way to avoid the fire, park in a cleared area, face the car towards the fire, and turn the engine off. Then lie on the floor and cover yourself to protect yourself from radiant heat. Live bushfire ready. For more helpful tips, visit myfireplan.com.au today.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver. And we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together.
When the whole world seems turned upside down, we sort through it together. Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk. TNT.
Welcome back to the Johnny Vedmore Show, my friend. Wow, Basil Valentine knows how the world works. What an amazing man. And in this part of the show, I'm going to be joined by quite a campaigner indeed. Mark Byford is a British farm and campaigner for No Farmers, No Food. You can find him on X at the Bowler Hat Farmer at Mark Byford. That's B-Y-F-O-R-D. 27982. Mr. Byford, welcome to the Johnny Vedmore Show. How are you today?
Johnny, I'm living the dream.
Yeah, aren't we? Aren't we? Well, you're known as the bowler hat farmer, as everyone can see the reason why. And as the prices of foods and seeds skyrocket, should we be spending all our money on expensive bowler hats?
Well, mine fortunately was handed down three generations ago, so I got mine for free with a legacy.
There you go. A legacy hat. I thought I could trust you. And then it turns out your hat's handed down for you by the hierarchy above. No. All jokes aside, what is driving the UK food and farming crisis at the moment?
The crisis is coming from the DEFRA, the organisation that supports British, I quote, allegedly supports British farming. So that's a governmental department that's there to back up and support the farmers. That isn't happening. I think the WEF have taken control of that and they are going out of their way to smash British farming to the ground. I would say, Johnny, in simple terms, we are at war as the public and the farmers. We are at war and the public just have no idea it's happening.
Yeah, the public are mostly clueless to the what the people are doing above. That is for sure. Who are your allies within the UK political sphere, Mark? The elections are coming up. Are Starmer or Sunak on the side of the farmers in the UK?
No, they're all WEF bought people. The only person who I've heard really speaking out is Andrew Bridgen. Who is the same MP who's spoken out against the jabs and all the health issues. He's about the only member. Quite a few Reform Party people have been involved in the campaign across the UK, but overall, I don't trust any of them anyway.
Yeah, it's hard to trust a load of people. And you keep mentioning the World Economic Forum. Of course, I've done a massive series on Klaus Schwab himself, including a lot about his history, the creation of the World Economic Forum out of the grandees of Harvard in the late 60s, where, of course, the CIA-funded course, Henry Kissinger's International Seminar, is where Klaus Schwab himself came from, where he was given his main mentors, John Kenneth Galbraith and Herman Kahn, to go back and create this organization. Do they know what they're doing? Is this on purpose?
I believe so. I believe this is only my personal opinion, I have to say, Johnny, but I would say that in the next year, we're going to see food prices double in the UK. That obviously benefits the people who are left standing. I don't think a lot of small farmers will be standing then. I think it'll only be the corporate farms that are owned by the banks. I think by that point, what I am seeing is a lot of grassroots farmers coming out of the woodwork now and setting up on small individual plots. I work quite closely with the People's Food and Farming Alliance, and that's one of the things which we're working really hard on at present is to get small growers up and going to try and fill that void in what's going to become a massive food shortage inside the next 6 months.
If people want to get involved in any of those sort of things, where's the best place for normal everyday people who want to get right in and make sure that they make changes at that level that you're talking about there and put pressure on the politicians and others?
I would say contact the People's Food and Farming Alliance, the PFFA. That's a great starting point. We've got a lot of people now coming together in the UK to work on a common goal, which is making sure there's food in the enough in the system to feed the public, which is quite obviously essential.
which is necessary. I've done another thing that I did a lot of work on was on the Wellcome Trust. I did an article called The Wellcome Five, which followed five of the main men who were behind the pandemic, especially in the UK, Jeremy Farrar, Richard Sykes, Edward Holmes, and two men who you may know as a farmer who are really massively important, Neil Ferguson and his mentor Roy Anderson, who were the central to the foot and mouth disease outbreak. Do you think that that period of history where farmers were decimated and were run roughshod, had no voice at all, do you think that was like a signal of the start of what was to come?
Absolutely. And I think we've only seen the tip of the iceberg so far, to be honest. I think that at present in the UK, farmers are offered a get out of farming payment. So it's 105 UK pounds. 105,000 UK pounds to leave farming, and then your farm is bought by a corporation so that nobody else can farm that land. over 2,500 farmers have already taken that payment out of 105,000 UK farmers that are presently held.
That is quite amazing, isn't it? And I mean, oh, those days were hard days for everybody, but it's not a surprise to see that, that led on to those people still had massive impact, not only on farmers, but also on what happened during COVID. And then the links between the two, of course, are just glaring. Now, another topic, many people in Blighty enjoyed, and for those who are listening outside the UK, Blighty is what we call Britain. When you wear a bowler hat, you have to call it Blighty. So many people in Blighty enjoyed beautiful sunshine this weekend. But on Saturday evening, the skies above Cardiff, where I live, were suddenly filled with contrails galore, and Sunday saw storm clouds begin to form, and now it's been grey days again. Will we be allocated a sunny weekend, do you think?
I don't know if you're up to spec on what happened on, I think it was Monday, Sunday and Monday evening. So we saw the aurora borealis across the UK, which hasn't in my time ever happened. And I would have to say that I think personally that was something to do with what was dropped in the sky to allow us to see pretty lights as another diversion.
There's a lot of that going on. So do you think geoengineering is happening? And absolutely. How does that affect
100%.
How does it affect farmers and exacerbate the food crisis?
Okay, it's desecrated. So in autumn this year, last year, when we were setting the winter wheat or winter barley, they were completely washed out. We had no success with that at all. So we reset spring barley. So you've obviously added to the cost of setting that. Barley prices and wheat prices this year are going to go through the roof. About 20% of the wheat and barley grown in the UK has not been planted or has been washed out. We're down at 50% of the potatoes are still not in the ground. 70% of the carrots have not been planted this year. All our main bulky food, what we rely on as good substantial diet food, carrots, potatoes for a meat and veg diet, the wheat for the bread, isn't going to be there this year.
Unbelievable. And what will people do? Will it just mean the prices will go up because we'll have to ship them in from abroad? And will that mean that not only will prices go up, but some other country will have a food crisis? Is it just going to be a knock-on effect?
I do not think long-term, and I say long-term as in the next 4 years. If you read the 2030 agenda, it clearly states we will not be importing any food into the UK. So I think that limits it. I think what's going to happen is the prices will get dearer and dearer and dearer. As I said earlier, they're going to double in the next 12 months, and I would say three times in the next 2 years.
Wow, that is going to be a big shock for a lot of people, especially restaurants who are already feeling the pressure. I mean, as the internet changes, of course, you've got Uber Eats and stuff that are taking up their mark off restaurants.
Yeah.
And restaurants are already trying to compete with each other like never before. So, I mean, that's going to have such a massive effect. Now, there's a question in the chat. I'm just looking over and seeing Penelope Pitstop's Ghosts asks, are we helping the farmers by shopping at farmer markets, or are we wasting our time?
No, absolutely. Absolutely crucial that people support the farmers by buying direct. The more, the better. What's happened, Johnny, is in the last few years, the supermarkets have pushed the farming prices down and the public's prices up, so they're consuming all the profits, and that needs to stop. The public want to do anything to support the food crisis at all. Shop with the farmers wherever possible and small independent stores, and ditch the supermarkets.
Yeah, and as Wee Fat Shooks also says in the chat, potatoes in the shops are terrible. So buy proper ones from directly from the farmers. And Holly says, are farmers being compliant to all the mad regulations, though? Is it time that they rebel?
I think that's on the cards, I have to say. What I would say is a lot of the bigger farms, what grow huge amounts of crops, are going to be the worst affected because they're too in bed with the banks not to comply. The smaller farmers of, let's say, 500 acres down to 50 acres, are the ones who are starting to step forward and starting to kick back against all this. One thing I will say, Johnny, on the geoengineering side, on this next Thursday on our farm, we're actually doing some tests on cloud bursting equipment to deal with the geoengineering side.
So when did you first start waking up to the reality of geoengineering?
I guess about 18 months ago when I really started to take notice of it. I've been privy to the 2030 agenda since I was 21. I'm now 56, so I've known about that for a long time and been preparing for all of that. But the geoengineering really came to light after, I think, after 2020, when we had such blissful sunshine for so long. And then after that, you start to think, hang on, we haven't seen a raindrop for nearly 6 months. It's been beautiful sunshine to keep everybody entertained. And now it's all going back to normal. Something has to be wrong here. And the more I dug into it, the more I learned, and the more I became concerned, I have to say.
Yeah, farmers are well known for doing a lot of digging. Johnny Dollar has asked, where is Mark's farm? Have you got a website going on that people can go to?
If they go to Facebook, especially, we've got one called the ARC Project, which gives me talking about everything to do with the farming and details about our farm. We've got a farm shop there, which we set up a few weeks ago on a trailer, so it doesn't apply with planning permission. It's built on a trailer. We built that to kick back at the supermarket supply chain.
Yeah, you need to as well, don't you, really? How do we prevent these Malthusian pseudoscientists from destroying the world then? How do we do this?
There lies the golden question. I think that I came up with a thing this week called Strive for Five. So this is every day. This is something I'm putting out to the public. Every day, do five things that kick back against the system. The biggest thing we can do to pull the system down is to take the money away from it. So don't spend your money with supermarkets. Always pay in cash. Buy your fuel from an independent filling station. Talk to people about what's going on in the sky. Talk to people about the jibby jabs. You know, find five things a day what you as one person where you might think, oh, that's insignificant. Times that by the thousands of us what I'm waking up, that becomes a very powerful issue, which they cannot stop.
Yeah, that's a beautiful advice. That is wonderful advice.
Strive for five.
Holly in the chat says, good man, hats off to him. Let's support them as much as possible. But if he takes his hat off, he'll no longer be the bowler hat farmer. So let's not go that. Oh, yeah, voila. Oh, I can't believe it. That's what you're hiding, really. That's the truth. Underneath there's grey. Who will you be voting for in the coming general elections? Or will you be joining myself and the wonderful Graham H. Moore and spoiling your ballot this time round?
100% spoiled.
Yeah, awesome. Awesomeness. I think most people are doing that nowadays.
Yeah.
So what's, you know, you gave us five really, really important tips there. But people find it hard to actually, you know, live by these principles.
Sure.
What is it, do you think, that can motivate people? That you said information there and, you know, and going against the narrative. What other advice would you give to people that means that they can do something at their local level?
Well, I think there's so much people can do that we're all led to believe got no voice. We're led to believe we've got no power. That's exactly the opposite. If people wake up and smell the roses on this, what the biggest driving factor has to be, Johnny, is that people are going to starve if they don't do something. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't like the idea of starvation. I've tried that before and it didn't go down very well. So, I ended up in a food bank and I never want to be there again. So I say, do the Strive for Five, step away from the system and find somewhere to go and volunteer. If there's a local community garden or grow stuff at home in the garden, get the kids involved, the grandkids. Take yourself away. Try and find some way of feeding yourself outside of the system, because it's going to come very soon that people cannot rely on the system. I would say within the next few months, the system's going to have a banking crash and we're all going to end up with no way of paying for anything unless we take the digital ID, and I'm not taking part in that either.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to avoid it for lots of people. I'm looking in the chat, people are saying they do not consent. They are saying that, you know, they are saying the same as what you were saying. Buy from farms, local butchers, and make sure that you don't allow them to outlaw home growing and rainwater collection. Hey, absolutely. Mark, what an awesome dude. You're going to have to come on the show again and talk to us again at some point.
I'd right? love to.
Because complete pleasure to meet you. Thanks for coming on.
It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Whew, that was a good, I enjoyed that interview. So thanks for sticking with us on the Johnny Bedmore Show. Remember, you can go to tntradio.live and get in the chat, ask a question or two, just like was happening there. And I always appreciate your actions, interaction. We'll be right back after the headlines on today's News Talk TNT.